Bandwidth for MacBreak Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
So I told the story before.
What story is that?
Starting a business in my cube at Adobe.
Oh, yes. How you used resources.
Well, I was putting in a lot of time anyway.
Yeah.
You know, because of the project had to ship. And it was one of those things that it didn't seem wrong at the time.
It didn't seem that way.
But, you know, my cube mate had got another job, and so there was another phone there, and there was extra computers there. And so, you know, it just started that way.
You just happened to use them.
And this probably went on for, we're going to call it 4 months. Mm-hmm. It was actually a much shorter time. I don't remember exactly what it was, but we're going to call it 4 months from the beginning of the business creation to when I rolled out of there at the end of the day and turned my badge in. Mm-hmm. But you know, it was about resources. It was about capture, video capture stuff. It was about getting access to CD burners. You know, because at the time, a CD burner cost $3,000. Mm-hmm. So how am I going to start a business that makes and creates interactive media if I don't have a CD burner?
Yeah, sure.
So,
and this is before bandwidth was really available on the network.
Yeah, well, you know, this was pretty much pre-web. I mean, you know, the web had just started.
The net was there, but the web
itself. Was there. The web was just the very beginning of that. And you know, while I was there, I actually got interviewed by Newsweek about using the web to look up the weather for the scuba trip that I was about to take.
Nice.
Okay.
And that. But anyway, the thing was is that you know, I used these resources to my advantage to jumpstart what I was about to do.
Okay.
And I don't recommend doing this to everybody because, you know, getting fired for using other things is not a good idea. But even more so, the reason why I don't recommend it now is the whole idea of corporate intellectual property is, you know, that contract that you sign once a year that says you're an employee gets more and more screws tightened every year about that. And so while the whole policy of don't ask, don't tell was full in effect. Now, with everybody looking at potential IPOs and raising lots of money and that kind of stuff, you kind of don't want to bridge that or pass that stuff. But anyway, I'm going to leave that end of story by saying don't quit your day job.
Yeah.
I think the one most important bit of advice about starting a business is don't quit your day job. Because if you don't have a source of revenue while this is starting up, while you're working on that, you're never going to replace it later on, you know, because there's so many things that you're going to leak money in the beginning.
Right. Well, you have to make sure you have, I mean, and I learned this the hard way myself too, you have to make sure you have enough of a reserve there when you first start out to, you know, to make it for a while.
Well, especially if you're, you know, there's a bunch of types of businesses that you can start.
Right.
But the one that's the crazy one is the when you're doing work for other people in a creative way.
Mm-hmm.
So you're basically using the tools on your Mac to make some art that someone's going to put in a magazine, or you're going to make a CD, or you're going to make a website, or you know something like that. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get paid until long after you finish that.
At least 15, 30 days.
Yeah, 15, 30 days. I mean, if you hand
some companies 90 days now.
2 months, 3 months was not uncommon for not getting paid.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can hand somebody an invoice, and that doesn't mean anything. It's
right.
Like, oh, no, we have to give this to our CFO, CEO, accounting guy. So then it's got to get run through the system. And then, like, guys, it takes 15 seconds to write a check.
Right, they're pushing you off because they're not been paid yet. And,
right.
You
know, well, that's the way of business, right? Everybody's not been paid yet.
Right.
Explain that to the rent.
Yes. So,
making Mac your business.
Yes.
Is the premise of this, and normally we don't say what this is all about, but I think it has to have the context.
Yes.
So I want to say this, that some people live and thrive in a day job. They love the corporate environment, that they're always going to be part of that, and they're probably never going to leave. And then there's a bunch of other people that, that get that itch. They get that thing that's like, ooh, I want to go make my own thing. You know, and they make someday today. You know, like, someday I'm going to open my own business. All right, well, now's the time. And they pull the trigger on that, and they find out, oh, my gosh, this is the hardest thing I've ever done.
There's a lot of stuff involved.
There's more. I'm like, I thought it would be fun to play bookstore, but it's not fun.
Yes, and I've worked in both environments, and there's all kinds of things you learn that first time you step out the door and go at it alone or with a couple friends, and suddenly you're like, wow, there's a lot of stuff I got to think about.
So I'm going to qualify this because everybody doesn't know who I am. They don't know my – they haven't seen my resume. But I've started – my first job was being a paperboy, and I expanded my route from 25 papers to 53 papers by the time I
was –
back in the day. It's called marketing and service and delivery and getting that done. I hated the collecting part. If that was automatic, I would have loved.
Collecting was fun. That's the payoff, right? You're going to buy stuff with your
collection. I want my $2.
There's scary people. There were scary people in my route, and I'm like, oh, you can have the paper for free. Just because I didn't like to talk to them.
Okay.
But that's the first lesson of business, is that if you don't ask for the money, you're not going to get it.
Collections.
That's the thing. So, and then I ran a computer store with my family for a while. We started that business back in the ripe early age of 1981. We kept that around until approximately 1987. And then I started a software company that made Macintosh software. And then I went and worked for a software company for a while. And then I left that and started another software company. That paid for itself, but it didn't pay for me. So I was kind of in huge debt at the end of that. So I started working on different various places in Silicon Valley, and then started another business in my cube. And so that business kind of continues on, although I chased the .com dollar, trying to raise a lot of money to do video, to do streaming video. This would have been 1999, way too early. But every one of those numbers
that hit the curve,
every one of those numbers that I was predicting have come true. So billions of dollars potential, but didn't happen. And then, so then I started doing. I thought the great idea would be doing tech support for people. You know, help. And I had a really specific niche, which was to help people who were designers and graphic artists and that kind of thing, because you know they have a. They don't have a lot going on, but they have problems. Printers, routers.
They have the similar needs to a lot, any office network and any folks that are working on various files and such. And yet that's not their focus. They don't tend to have someone in the office playing that, that role.
They don't tend to have that person. And they're also very willing to pay. So it was kind of that.
But as long as they have money with them.
Well, you get enough of them, and if you have a couple of people that are slow, that's okay. And then I wound that down. I said, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to play the BOFH anymore for 10 people. And so now what am I doing? I'm podcasting, and I'm hanging out in the office and doing support for the kids and making movies six times a year. So you know, that's kind of full circle,
but you use this nice little machine to do
exactly
that.
Well, in every one of these businesses that I've been involved in, with the exception of the paper route, have used a computer in some way, and it's probably been an Apple computer.
You're Mac man.
Well, no,
an Apple man.
You know, I have to not say that. I am a big fan of using the tool for the job.
Okay.
So if that happens to be Windows XP, that's awesome. If it happens to be
just
Red Hat
don't
server,
let it be Vista, please.
Never.
The operating rule there was that it was tool. It has to be a tool in order for it to be the right tool.
So. Yes. Okay.
So anyway, that's my sort of resume without calling out names and that kind of stuff.
Right. So how do we do business with this machine?
Well, there's lots of ways to do business. So we talked about some of these things. We have we're going to break this down into five different places. You can do tech support, which is making not works networks.
Right.
You can repair broken stuff, mm-hmm. like fixing dead iPods, right? There's a whole lot of people that are advertising this on Craigslist right now, and you could probably do this anywhere in the country where, you know, bring me your dead iPod and I will make it new. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that there's a cost to that, right? A battery costs $10. Mm-hmm. You're probably only going to make $25 an iPod to restore them, but that's a great skill to have.
Yeah, it's cheaper than someone having to go buy a new iPod.
Exactly. And there's lots of stuff to repair in the business, and we'll get more into that. There's always training.
Mm-hmm.
People need to have their training stuff done. You know, and it's everything. I mean, like, you could pick, I'm going to be the guy who does font management. Mm-hmm. And then go around from design shop to sweatshop to, you know, internet company and teach them about font management.
Mm-hmm.
Workflow stuff, too. I mean, as far as the training, there's so many folks who they have a process, maybe they're barely, you know, they're surviving their projects or whatever, but they don't have something, they haven't had someone sort of step back and create something repeatable for it. So even if it's not a specific piece of software or whatever, but just like workflow stuff.
Right. Well, even email management, right? To get that chaos of email to a more manageable thing so that you know, that people are spending less time dealing with it. I know that Merlin talks a lot about inbox zero, and I talk about inbox fake zero. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, those are skills that need to be taught to other people. And so, you know, it's possible that you could do, I don't know, go send out flyers and say, hey, I'll train your people how to do this.
Right.
Pre-sale and post-sale support. This is different from just general tech support, but a lot of people don't know which Mac they should buy. They don't know which router or...
Help me buy a computer.
Yeah, help me buy a computer.
And that's one of those things that, you know, I don't do it necessarily as a business. Well, I have done it as a business, but all the time I get people, what computer should I buy? What router should I buy? What?
Yeah.
Can you help me? I need to figure this out. And most of the time I give that advice out for free unless it's a large company, and then I will charge them to do that.
Exactly. You know, and then, like, for example, just setting up a computer for somebody, you know, a lot of people don't have time to waste 4 hours to install Adobe CS3.
Right. And really the trend in all this, when you really look at it, look at what, you know, Best Buy's done. Look at what Circuit City has, FireDog, right.
Geek Squad,
mm-hmm. and all these different, the Nerd Herd on, Chuck, if you guys have seen Chuck, but that's besides the point. Sorry. <Right. laughs> Media reference.
And then there's the last bit, which is using Macs to make a specific thing like art or engineering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're
it's the platform for
your
work.
what you're basing your work on. And so stuff like that is software development, photography, 3D and video production, CAD work. Even
the list goes on.
Yeah, the list goes on and on. Basically, you could even use a Mac for making parts of something using a CNC machine and those kind of things. So there's lots of stuff. You know, you don't have to think of the business that in those four ways, but it kind of, I don't know, kind of helps a little bit. But in all cases, you're doing something with a Mac for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, getting paid somehow along the way to do that. the first thing I wrote down here is getting into consulting. Don't quit your day job, no matter what.
Yeah. And do it in the evenings.
Do it in the evenings.
Do it on the weekends.
Do it at lunchtime.
Yeah.
You know, basically what you want to do, and I, every time someone goes, oh, I want to start a business, like, you have no idea. Try it on. You know, just like, do you really want to do it?
Mm-hmm.
So get a client, get two clients, and, you know, work with them over the period of time and see if you actually like that kind of work.
One of the mentors you could use there is if the outside work is so busy and you're loving it so much that you're having trouble finding time for your day job, that's, you know, you're at a tipping point. But you're right that a lot of folks do tend to, like, I'd love to get into this, stop cold turkey with the paycheck or wherever they're at, and then they try and make it work. And usually there's ramp up time, there's getting a reputation, all that stuff takes time. It's good to do it in pieces and sort of get into it slowly, I guess.
you know, and figuring out what you're trying to solve for people.
Mm-hmm. If you're any good at it.
If you're any good at it, right.
Well, and that, right there, that's a big one, is that be honest with yourself about what happens with those first projects. Mm-hmm. If they go terribly awry and you're not having fun,
yeah, then
it's probably not the right thing to do.
It's probably not the right thing to do, because the thing is, it only gets worse.
And don't, you know, be honest with yourself. Don't necessarily blame another party.
No.
If it really was, you know, oh, I screwed that up, didn't I? You know,
be right. honest with yourself. Full disclosure, that was my fault, Kenji, that project. Between us, it went really bad. It was me.
Damn!
Well, start with something that you know how to do, right? So you don't just quit being an accountant to become a lion tamer.
Right. Unless you're really good at it.
Unless you,
you know, have... Or you're just awesome.
You're just awesome at taming lions to begin with. You know, you don't just jump out of this and jump into this. You've got to know what you're doing to begin with. Which means, you know, you may be an accountant at a big firm, and you go, okay, I'm going to go be an accountant for little guys now, because that's what I'm going to follow my dream. Mm-hmm. Which is funny. Sorry, I'm just cracking myself up about, you know, an accountant has a dream.
Follow your bliss, is that what you're saying?
Something like that. No, I just don't know that many accountant jokes. Anyway, where does this next thing, it's on this list, that's, what are we solving? And we want to start saying is, okay, well, this is on the outline, and it says this. Once you get paid for doing something for someone, it changes everything. Mm-hmm. So if you had a really good time fixing your friend's computers, you know, or dealing with your girlfriend's problems, or, you know, whatever those things were, imagine what happens now that you take $100 for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly you own it. Mm-hmm. It's your problem. And it's every little thing from then on. It doesn't print. Ring, ring, ring. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can't get on the internet. Ring, ring, ring. And so it's to you that you're doing that. So part of the trick is to set the expectations mm-hmm. for how you are expected to deal with that person.
How you're structuring mm-hmm. the compensation, what the turnaround time is for follow-up stuff. That's all very good. It's easy to not account for those things in your initial bid.
Right.
Yes.
Especially if it's a fixed sort of thing, right? And then you end up with, we didn't talk about follow-on, and there's the assumption, like you say, that magic switch has been flipped, and money's exchanged hands, and now you should be there whenever I call, right?
Right, of course.
Yeah.
And I expect you to be, and I'm pissed off when you're not. Right. Oh, and I'm not paying you any more money, because we already had that exchange once.
Well, and that's one of the things, just bringing that up, that I do for a lot of clients, is that I will give them what my phone rate is. Mm-hmm. If I've gone in to do technical support for them, or it's a, they're calling me for my expertise, I say, okay, you can call me. I have no problem with that. But you have to understand, my phone rate is the following, and I will charge you in the following increments. You call me for 5 minutes, I'm still going to charge you for a 15-minute call.
Right. Well, that's coming under this category of, if you don't say what your fees are, and we're talking about this from the support, making stuff, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of a business of this. If you don't tell people what your rates are and have them posted on your website, then how are they supposed to know? And how are they supposed to be referred to this? Mm-hmm, it's not like they're going to read your mind and go, oh, yeah, we owe you $25 because we called you on a Saturday morning at 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's making sure that you there's nothing to be gained by trying to be overly polite at the onset and try and delay the conversation about that stuff. Because, again, it's managing expectations from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
So usually your rate is predefined.
Yep.
You know what that is. It's like $80 an hour or $2 a minute, whatever it ends up being. But you have to know
what that is.
They have to know what that is so that you can have the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that you can't just change stuff around. You know, for like that guy over there, it's $80, but for the cute girl over there, it's like $30. No, you don't want to do it. It's like consistency is key.
Yep.
And then that way you set your standards for how you get paid and what you get paid.
Mm-hmm.
The exception of this is creative services.
Yeah. Which can get a little,
Well, generally.
For which you do not get paid.
For what you don't.
Oh, is that why I didn't go?
Generally, sometimes, you know, sometimes people want to know, can you build my website? I'm like, okay, $16,000. Right. Oh, that's not what I had in mind. I had $8,000 in mind. Okay, well, maybe I can make you
here's half of a website. Here's a cracker.
Yeah.
maybe we can be clever about the way that we make our website. Or how much does a logo cost? Mm-hmm. Logo design is $2,500. Ooh, I don't have that much money. Well, we're really good at what we do. See you. You know, and they're like, wait. We want to work with you. I'm like, okay. So generally, the price is the price. And
unless, now, the one thing, and this is just because I have also done sales for many years at high-end level, is that if you're the kind of person that does want to make people feel like they're getting a deal, mm-hmm. build in your discount.
Well, you can do that, right. So, there's always the wiggle, right? So, mm-hmm. for example, I have a client that I really like to work with, right? And I sometimes get fees from them, and sometimes I don't get the fee I want. Mm-hmm. And I always start off the conversation, the conversation is, how much is this going to cost? I'm like, $32,000, we'll just say, for this case. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we were thinking more like six. I'm like, okay, well, for six. And so now I'm still interested in the conversation because I want, now they've given up their hand. Uh-huh. Now I know exactly how much money they're thinking.
Right. Or at least that they're potentially bargaining with.
Right, they're bargaining with, right? So now I can say, okay, am I still interested in the project? Is it a portfolio piece? Mm-hmm. Is it how fun, how long is it? How fun potential is it? What's my damage for doing this? Mm-hmm. How am I physically going to be, feel at the end of this? Mm-hmm. Is it rush, or is it just, long and drawn out? If it's long and drawn out, I may not even be interested for the $6,000 because it's going to take too long to finish the thing. If it's 3 days, we need it by Friday. Okay, I can do that. Mm-hmm. It's like short, doom, I'm done. You know, it's out the door.
And there's always the, it seems very rare that when it comes time to talk about, if there's a constraint of budget, but they still want this big pool of whatever, I'll call it features, because I'm usually talking about software stuff. But the conversation can always be turned towards, well, what can we do with the budget too, so that way you're protecting yourself, and that you're not giving the Taj Mahal that was the $32,000 project for $6,000.
Right.
You're giving them the $6,000 project for $6,000,
and that's why I'm, I'm like, oh, I'm still interested in the project because it's a fun company to work for, right? Mm-hmm. Or the project might sound like I want it for the portfolio,
or it's in getting you in the door. There's other bigger projects.
The problem with that is that, okay, so this is the issue with taking it for $6,000, mm-hmm. is that you're doing the project that they asked for, $6,000. So the next time when you bid the project and you go, okay, it's $50,000 project, they're like, yeah, but you did the last one for six.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know any good heuristics for or methods. How do you not screw yourself with the loss leader?
And I've actually done this before, that I've taken way lower than mm-hmm. I normally would for a project. And what I do when I know I'm doing that is I tell them up front, understand,
This is for this project.
You are getting a discounted rate for this project.
Expectation management.
And I always tell them that up front. If I know I'm really giving them a discount rate on the project, and the last three major projects I've worked on, they've brought me back in, and they were okay with my new higher rate for the mm-hmm. larger project, because
you're telling them.
Yeah, I told them. And that's the thing.
You say, I'm doing it for a portfolio. Yeah. I'm doing this for my portfolio. That's why I'm taking this for this rate.
Right. Yep.
Then later on, you can go and, well, normally I would, or you scale it back to there. And then when you bid your next project, mm-hmm. and it's 50, they're like, well, why'd you do it for so, like, well, we scaled back the project. I mean, you didn't get
and I liked you then. I don't like you now.
You didn't get pearled necklace, and you didn't get, and do you see me driving the Porsche? No, I don't have that either. Yeah. So, how is this me raking you over the coals?
Right.
That's a good, I'm going to use that. Did you see me drive in a Porsche? I haven't used that one.
No, there's no Porsche out
there. Do you see a Porsche out there? Well, that one's not mine.
Is this a 17-inch laptop? I don't think so.
No. Is this a MacBook Air? No, it's not. If that was a MacBook Air, then you knew that I overcharged the project. Well, no, and there's something to that. So, for example, if you it's all about the presentation of stuff. Mm-hmm. If you want to look like you're inexpensive, then you got to make sure that you don't have flashy things. You can't have the rad watch. You got to dress the part,
mm-hmm.
And that means just, setting those. But if you want to look expensive, then you also have to dress the part. The watch better be there. The shoes better be on. You know,
better have shoes.
The time, yeah, exactly. And there better be pants.
Wow. Okay.
Well, no.
What consulting work have you been doing, John?
The shoes and pants combo.
So you guys laugh because here's the thing: I always wear shorts.
I know you. And yes,
right? That's why I said there better be pants.
Yes.
Post your fees. You can always lower your price. You can't raise them. It's tough to raise your price.
That's why I say build in your wiggle room into the price. Even if you think that price is going to be too high, that means you've built the wiggle room in, and you make them feel like they're getting it. Oh, I got a discount, or I talked them down.
So the thing that I hate is the stuff that I can't charge for.
Yeah.
Oh, that thing when I'm like, oh, that's easy, and then 65 hours later, and I finally figured it out.
A $400 piece of software.
Yeah, and then I can only charge $400.
Yeah,
you know, it's like okay, live and learn.
Mm-hmm.
Or when this is hilarious, computer store story. I was installing this laser printer that had this really sucky cartridge system. It had a slide thing onto the cartridge mechanism, and that held the toner.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm installing this, and I don't get it on right, and I pick it up like I've picked it up 100 other times, mm-hmm. and the thing breaks. And
the toner.
You wearing shorts at this point?
No, I'm wearing a white shirt and a tie and proper pants because put this in perspective. This is 1985.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay?
So brand, you know, laser printers. This is the knockoff laser printer.
It still probably cost $10,000. Yeah,
the thing was is that, you know, live and learn. We should have put the HP scanner or the HP one there that used the cartridge. There's a reason why it was sealed to prevent this very problem. Anyway, toner goes everywhere. And if you've ever dealt with copier toner or know what this is, it holds a charge. So it's negative charged, and anything that's the other charge, it sticks to.
Instantly,
and it doesn't come off. And so it's on the chair, it's in the carpet, it's on the desk, it's in the keyboard, it's everywhere. And it doesn't. Oh. And so what do I do? And this is the day before cell phone, right? I pick up the phone that's just covered in black. Like everybody around me has just seen this happen. I call the store. I need a vacuum cleaner. I need every single cleaning product possible. And I need a case of paper towels. And you're going to have to call the carpet cleaner. And I put down the phone and I walk out. And I don't look at anybody. I just walk out, you know, because it's just like I've just done the worst thing possible. Then I go back and I, you know, find another phone. I'm like, we got to refund. We got to take all the gear out that we've sold these guys. We got to give them a refund. Mm-hmm. We got to clean their office. We got to undo this because we've just lost this client because of this thing. And so,
but by doing those things, you might win them back.
It was done.
Okay.
We call another store and go, this is just what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys got to, you know, call this guy and say, you know, new equipment will be there tomorrow, mm-hmm. and just put our stuff in the corner and, you know, there you go. It's a gift.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And, you know, cause it's one of those things, like it was a bunch of lawyers.
Yeah.
That was the problem. And the place where this was pretty visible inside the company. And mm-hmm. so there was like, you know, sharpened sword, fallen sword.
Yes.
So anyway, screw-ups. You can't charge for the screw-ups. You can only you can only undo them and try to make them. And not inconvenience anybody.
Well, and when technology is your business, especially if you're doing media things, you have to always think, do I have the hard drive space? Do I have the software?
Yeah.
You have to make sure you've got the tools. And you might think you have them, but, you know, do I have that extra half terabyte of space that suddenly I need because this is a video project? You know,
right. Well, where's that other drive? I mean,
yeah.
Fry's is open till 9 o'clock, and it takes 45 minutes to drive at the normal speed from San Francisco to the nearest one, right? Best Buy closes at 9, and they are 7.5 minutes from here. So, you know, you kind of have to know where the places are and when they close that will help you out.
Right.
Best Buy used to not be there. That's why the Fry's issue.
You knew where the Fry's
were. Exactly. Well, and it's like, here's the thing. When we're making movies, because mm-hmm. that's one of the other projects that I've done, it's really important that you know as your as a PA where the Radio Shack is, where the hardware store is, where the grocery store is. Fill up your car with gas the night before. Have the tool case in the car. You know, have the unexpected things that you might need, the extra extension cord, the extra power bars, the, you know, and I'm not talking about power strips. I'm talking about the, you know, the grossest food in the whole world. But, you know, you got to have something because you're not going to, you're going to need the something that you don't have.
So going along with that, and this is, you know, when your computer itself is part of the business.
Yeah.
And you're there when, with a client. If you are like me, where you have lots of icons on your desktop, have a separate user login that you can demo from that has a nice, clean desktop, but you make sure has access to all your software and your data. It's one of those things. It's just a pure presentation thing. I set up a different account for it's my presentations. Demo, right? It's called demo, or it's called presentation, or it's called work, or something along those lines. But make sure you have that environment that is, if your client's going to be there looking over your shoulder, well, show me how to do this, or show me technically, or picture, or whatever it is you're doing for them.
Right.
Have that clean environment.
Man, it doesn't cost anything. You know, exactly. It's not like you have to buy an extra user account for your Mac to make that go.
It's just investing the time to set that up.
Yeah. Well, and it makes it much better because you can have your demonstration in the dock. You can have the parts that you need that are right there. You can change the background of the desktop to be your logo. You know, it's all the tricks that go with that.
Mm-hmm.
Cards.
Yes.
Show me your business card, please.
Which one?
Yeah, that's the point. Which one? Ben, do you have a business card?
I think I have business cards through the PixelCorp, but I haven't used a business card in a while.
Okay, well, that's part of my thing. I have business cards in my wallet for me. That's just my name with a phone number. And it goes to the robot. So if you want to call and ask for me, 206-666-5338, that's the robot.
It's your real
name. You're rocking the 206.
Well, that's K7.net. Right, and what that is it's a voicemail that captures the guy calling and then sends you an email as a wave.
Got it.
And then you get it captures the phone number and the message and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool. It also grabs faxes.
Great.
And it doesn't cost anything.
And what's it called?
K7.net. So that's on my personal card. The other thing is I have a business card for MacBreak Tech that says producer, and I have another one that just has no name on it. You got to be able to play different parts to different people depending on where you are. And I have a card for beerschool.com that says producer. So, and that's my card. Mm-hmm. So I'm a freak in a way. I have three business cards in my pocket.
The thing is to get the business cards made not the day before you need to be there, but a month before you need them, or a week before at least. I mean, I've done that so many times before where it's like, oh, I've got to be there tomorrow and I don't have business cards. So
yeah, but you can make them really quick. And
you can, but it does look more professional. You know, spend that $25, $50, $40, go to one of the online printing things.
There's a whole ton of them. Overnight Prints is the one that everybody seems to like. It's $20 for a bunch of cards, and they will get them to you in a day. It's pretty amazing. And then there's lots of other rocking cards. Right. But remember, you can use your inkjet printer and some thick stock to make a card that will actually be pretty acceptable. You have to have a straight edge and a X-Acto knife to make it work. I'm going to say this about business cards, and this is the one thing that's really important. Is when you're talking to somebody, you get to do one thing. You get to be somebody who can fix their problem or make their project or, you know, do, you know, that one thing. They're not going to remember that you have a show about beer and a show about Max and you happen to make, you know, you're a writer and that you do six projects a year and, you know, all that stuff. They're going to go, where's your filmmaker card?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it doesn't say John Foster filmmaker, then I'm not going to be able to have... They're not going to remember who I am on the other side. So you get that one position. And, you know, hated people for the longest time because they didn't respect my different stuff. But now I'm like, whatever, that's just people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how could you not remember me for that? Like, no, because you never have done that for us.
Yeah. Their focus is elsewhere. Their focus is on what you have and will do for them.
Yep. Steps to opening your shop, your thing, your project, your whatever you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
The very first thing you need to have, besides your business card, is your website.
Now, I caution people, do not get engrossed in your website unless it is your business itself. People, I have a friend right now who is spent, I would say, on the order of 80 hours working on her website, and there's nothing there yet.
And what's the line of business?
It's basically she is providing consulting services.
Mm-hmm.
And she spent all this time in making these beautiful designs and all this. And I was like, well, what is that doing for you? Is it bringing you clients right now? No, is it telling people really what it is?
Should have been on the phone for 80 hours. Exactly. Making contacts.
Do not get engrossed in your website. And if you're not good at doing that, pay a college or high school kid or a freelancer to do it for you, to take it out of your hair.
I'm going to say this, is that if you get the right hosting service, mm-hmm. you can install WordPress with one click.
Yes.
That in that install, there's a whole bunch of templates mm-hmm. that's pre-installed. True. Eeny, meeny, miny, a template.
Yeah.
And then use the pages function to put your contact info. Another page is to put your other stuff. And then you don't care if you put another thing in there, but mm-hmm. you got the three or four pages that you need.
Or use iWeb. iWeb's got some great basic templates built in.
All right. Pretty quick. Use the new version of iWeb. You got to know a little bit. You got to know the password to log in. You got to know some other stuff.
Mm-hmm. The principle's the same, though. Focus on the things that are actually going to bring you the business as opposed to... It's very easy, especially if finding the business is the thing you're trying to figure out. It's very easy to obsess over the stuff that's right in front of your face and that you can have a lot of control over.
Well, using the WordPress example of using pages and installing it and picking a template, because the whole process is 1 hour. Mm-hmm. From the time when you pick your domain on the whatever hosting service mm-hmm. you're going to use to having your first page done is 1 hour.
Yeah, if you're good about it.
Even if you're not, even if you have to scratch your head over this, you're only into it for 4 hours before you haven't figured it out,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. I mean, it's a finite number of things, and there's enough documentation about WordPress to make that go. Or just do this, make a brain dead HTML page that has your address and your phone number and whatever logo you've scribbled together and call it a day.
iWeb it.
Right?
That's simple one page iWeb.
We can talk about logos for a bit.
Well, there's a great logo design service. You pay them like, what is it?
$200.
$200 and you get actually a pretty decent logo.
Yeah, you remember the name of it? I don't.
We'll look it up. I'm not going to stop to do that, but there's a couple of services, and basically you tell them what colors you like, what shape you like. You give them the name of your business, and you point at some things, some logos that they have possibly done that you're into, and then within, I don't know, a day, you get some designs back, and then you go, like that one. I like that one a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then can you make these changes? Then they make those changes, and then you're done.
Mm-hmm.
I know that when I designed my last logo, which was for Beer School, and I will talk about the MacBreak Tech one also, but when we designed when I did that, I spent the total time of 1 hour
mm-hmm.
making this drawing and putting this logo there. And I'm like, I'm not going to obsess about this because I'm going to change it. I'm going to change it 5 times in the next year mm-hmm. until I find something I like. And then we were talking about it on one of our shows. You know, wow, we really need a new logo. And some guy out of the blue sends us a logo, and that's the new logo that's there. And it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's all kind of serendipitous thing. The MacBreak Tech logo, which is even lamer, I took OCRA as the font and and blasted it on the logo, and then I did a little bit of mirror action mm-hmm. and grayed it out so mm-hmm. that it was there. That was a sum total time of 5 minutes, and it took longer to find the high-res file for the show so that I could get it going than it did to actually do the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a ton of, I mean, you just even do a Google search. There's all these places that for $99 will do your design work.
So don't, you know, it's like if you don't like it, don't stop doing your steps just because, you know, go on to the thing. And we can talk about getting business.
Mm-hmm.
I guess depending on what kind of business you're making. So let's say you're doing a service business.
Right.
You're going to fix knotworks,
mm-hmm.
right? Best place to do that, Craigslist. Do it in your area. Sign up, you know, post on Mondays and Tuesdays that you have your service available. Don't worry about the rest of the week because people are they have a problem. They've come in on Monday. Help, help. They're going to look for that. That's when you're going to have your most success.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people are doing business after 12 o'clock on Friday. You're not going to get a new client at 12 o'clock on Friday. No way, no how.
Well, there are occasions, but
I like to look for business in bars because even if I don't find business, it's a win.
Yes.
Yeah, it's no matter what. Yeah.
Well, you know, and so you're always marketing. You're mm-hmm. always, you know, you're always on business in bars. Okay, I get it now. which brings up networking, right? And not the, you know, your friends, your clients, your buddies, the people that you used to work with, all these people are potential for helping you find your next job, business, associate, project, whatever you're going to do.
Everyone's going to have anecdotes one way or the other, but it's almost the flip side of the hiring equation, right? If you're hiring someone, you want to have them somewhat pre-qualified because it's a referral from someone that you know and trust, and that mm-hmm. you're trusting that they're not going to hand you someone who's not qualified or that's hard to work with or whatever. It's the same thing when looking for clients. You would much rather have someone that you have worked with and have had a good relationship with forward you someone than to just go cold. Even right. Craigslist stuff is fine too for that sort of thing if you're looking for just casting a wider net. But always when you can, the business that's through someone you know, in my experience anyway, it tends to be higher quality.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, at least you come pre-qualified, and you might actually, here's the thing, your friend is not going to sell you out to that freak client who wants change, you know, that's really tough to work with and never pays. You won't have that friend
mm-hmm.
at the end of that relationship.
I will fire that friend.
Friend,
you're fired.
It's like firing a fan. Yeah, that's a really bit creepy there, fan. Thanks a lot. Did I say that out loud?
Yes, you did, John.
I did.
Your internal voice came out.
Okay, there's a book. You got to get this book. If you're going to make a business about this, you got to get Guy Kawasaki's Art of the Start book. Mm-hmm. It's a really thin book. It doesn't have that many pages in it. There's 204 useful pages. No, that's not true. This one's stuck together. That doesn't sound right either. There's 217 useful pages. And this book has got really big type, and there's only so many pages you have to read. And you only have to read until, the first 60 pages.
Which is?
The beginning of the book.
Oh, why are those 60 so important?
Because this is where the meat of everything is going to come from in this. And so what you're going to learn is you're going to learn about how to position your business. So, like, for example, the idea is that you're going to make meaning. You're going to make something better for people. So that means you're going to make a better pet rock. You're going to train people how to have nothing in their inbox. You're going to train hamsters how to flip, okay? And so one of the things that I wrote down of this was like, okay, well, if I was going to make a support company, then I would say better support. That's what I do. I do better support. Not the best support.
Mm-hmm.
Not Cadillac support. I just do better support, meaning that I'm going to be better than the guy over there who just screwed you over and left your router not working.
Again.
So then the names come out of that. So then you can name your company based on that mantra,
mm-hmm.
you know, that making meaning thing that goes with that. So, you know, better blank support. So better Mac support, better Windows support, better network support. Anyway, first 60 pages is there, and it talks about everything about doing presentations.
10-20-30.
10-20-30. Yeah, we got that wrong before. We called it 30-20-10.
It's 10, 20, 30.
I know. But I'm saying got from there. And talking about making niches, and talking about how are you going to get good at running your business?
Hire someone else.
Yep, exactly. Hire your books out. Hire your logo out. Hire your web stuff out. You know, basically, you want to be the delegator, mm-hmm. not the decider, the delegator.
And actually, that's one of those issues that I find burns people all the time, especially in the creative industry.
Yeah.
If you're a creative person and you're using your Mac or your system to do creative work and you want to do your own business, don't try to do the things that aren't your specialty. Mm-mm. Make sure you find, yeah, spend that a little bit of extra money. I know it's going to hurt, but spend that a little bit of extra money and find an accountant. You know,
right.
Spend that little bit of extra money and get a lawyer for a couple hours, drop some documents if you need to, things like that.
Yeah. You know? And you bring up the lawyer here, and I'm going to, this is actually down the way a little bit. And I'm going to say, don't rush out and get a lawyer.
Don't rush out and get a lawyer. But when it's time.
Oh yeah. When it's time, then you can have that conversation.
Yes.
But lawyers are very expensive people, or can be. Mm-hmm. They will charge you for every sentence that you say, whether it's an upper and lower case with no punctuation.
All of them will do that to you.
Well, but I'm just saying, in general, they are the extractors of cash if there ever is a startup. Mm-hmm. And so if you're trying to do a partnership with somebody, there's a great book that already has all these things hashed out. It's from NOLA Press, and I'll put the link to this specific book in the notes. But the idea is all those partnership agreements are there. The things that you need to get going are all there. And, you know, spending $800 isn't necessary. You can spend $1,895 and get something that will protect you, your assets, and your business from, you know, the potentials that go with having a business, you know, from a partner that either dies or decides that doesn't want to be in it anymore, or, you know, whatever happens with partners.
But lots of things.
Lots of things. So what was I going to say about, the thing with lawyers is a lot of people are like, oh, I need to trademark, I need a lawyer to do my business opening, right? Which means you have to file the fictitious and all that. Sometimes you don't even have to file that stuff, because if you're using your own name, if you're making a consulting business or a art making project and you say, I'm going to use my name, you know, it's myname.com and that, you already have your tax ID. You already have your business. You don't have to make those things. Now, the thing you might have to do, I know that in San Francisco, this is the case. You have to register with the city.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not doing a fictitious, even if you're just doing business as you, you still have to file.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big surprise, huh? And it's a big fine if you don't. If you're running a business that's making a lot of money that it doesn't know about.
Yep. That's why I run everything through Vanuatu.
Vanuatu. Anyway, so which brings up taxes.
Worry about your taxes.
You have to worry about your taxes. Well, you thought you had to pay taxes when you were just an employee.
No.
Business owner. There's sales tax, city tax, state tax, Fed tax, FICA tax, unemployment, property tax, taxes for employees that you didn't know that you had.
Yes.
And then on top of that, there's the other tax, which is the insurance tax. Because I know that when I was doing business with Adobe and Apple, I had to have specific insurance. I had to have $1 million liability policy, and I had to have my car insured to a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, and I had to prove it. I mm-hmm. couldn't just say, oh, yeah, I have that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that, you know, that brings up an interesting point. I mean, we were talking about this in another context, is if you're making money with your computer, make sure you own the software on it. Don't use crack software.
Nope. No, you know, that's right. Well,
yeah. In fact, there's a client I'm working with that requires proof that the software on my computer is actually owned by me, right. And they won't let me do work for them until I show them that I actually own the software. And this is actually starting to become maybe a little bit more prevalent if you work with certain bigger clients.
I think I could be wrong, but I know that if you are working for military,
mm-hmm.
you have to prove your licenses.
Well, a lot of times they require that they own the licenses and right. that you use one of their systems.
Sure. But I'm saying that if you're a contractor mm-hmm. and you're basically, oh, I'm doing art, then you have to prove your licenses.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, here we have all these. We had a guy, one of our designers, who was running CS3 on his machine. And it was a laptop that we owned, but everybody has admin passwords. They can install whatever they want. I don't care. The problem was that I do care when it comes to the licensed software.
Mm-hmm.
So he was running CS3 because it was an Intel machine, and he was like, it's slow if I run Photoshop. I'm like, I don't care. We don't have a license for that. You can't run it. You know, he says, okay, I deinstall it. Then later on, I'm back over checking something out on the, because he's had some printer problem. And I'm like, why is CS3 on here? We don't have a license for this. He's like, it's just the demo. I'm like, what, do you deinstall your machine every 30 days down to the metal and reinstall it back? You cannot run this. Short story long, recently we ended up buying licenses for CS3 mm-hmm. for all the machines because it was like, okay, it's time to do this now. You know, and that's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Right. No, well, and, you know, yeah, software is expensive, but if you're going to make that your business, you need to.
I'm going to say the software's not, you know, the thing that everyone complains about is, like, it costs a lot more to run a Mac-based business back in 1995 when I started this, when a 9-gig hard drive costs $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
Right, when a CD burner, you know, that was the $3,000 item.
Right.
And a disc, and I remember having to buy them and have them, FedExed in, were $50 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
So when you went to burn the disc, it was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Like,
but I mean more along the lines of that, you know, there are certain fixed costs that, you know, yeah. if you're going to do business, you really have to think about, well, I really do have to own that copy of Photoshop. Exactly. I do have to own that copy of Final Cut. I mm-hmm. do have to own those networking tools to make sure that I'm doing that stuff. So don't put yourself in a bind.
I mean, it's easy to say too, but it's again back to that sort of choice point of if you're finding that you're needing to try and escape all of those costs, whether it be professional services or the software or whatever, mm-hmm. then the question is, should you be doing that as the business?
Right. Yes.
Are you doing enough business and are you focusing on the things that would bring in enough so that those things become support costs and they're there, but they're not, oh my gosh, I can't do this unless I'm able to do it on pirated software.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or not pay anybody for anything.
I mean, here's the thing. We've all pirated software. Arr. Yeah. And I'm going to be the first to say, yeah, I did. You know what? But there were tools that I didn't want, that I couldn't buy because it was exorbitantly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I still had to learn how to use the software. And at some point, it's like, okay, I've learned it. I'm about to make money with this. Okay, I'm going to do the first project mm-hmm. using the ill-gotten wares.
Mm-hmm.
But right after that, as soon as I got paid, you know, I plunked down $12.95 for director.
Right.
You know, that was like, okay, and then I had to buy it again because it was the PC version. You had to have two copies of everything.
Right.
It's like, $2,500 of software. But okay, still, that's how I was making money.
I mean, there's all kinds of different things that you really do need to worry about if you're going to go out. You know, technology seems like it's an easy business to get into.
It is an easy business to get into,
but it's all the things around it that will trip you up.
Well, like I was making the joke about, I don't want to play bookstore anymore. You know, I was just like the other day, like, I don't want to play BOFH anymore. I'm tired of playing that game. Tired of the losers. Well, I can never get tired of the losers. How else are you going to make their life miserable if they aren't there? This thing I wrote down here called What to Do When You Get Screwed.
Yeah.
I've said for years and years and years that client is spelled C-H-A-N-G-E. Client. And it doesn't matter if you're in the retail business, because this has happened to me, where I've had bad customers. You know, customers that, like, they want so much attention and they want so much support, and finally you go, dude, here's $100. Can you just walk out of my door and never come back? And, you know, the ramifications of that guy talking to 100 people, it's worth it just to have him gone. you know, where that extra needy customer is always right guy. It's like, okay, you're costing me money. You're costing me time. Everybody's annoyed. You know, nobody wants to talk to you, and you're gone. The flip of that is that if you're working for another company, you know, doing some work, at some point you wrap it all up. You get as close as you can. You turn in the files, and you go, it's client firing day, right? And you're done with that guy.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, we think that we cannot service you any longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Gone. Or stay and fight.
Yeah.
Generally, staying and fighting tends to be a losing proposition. Yeah, the idea is to structure things in such a way that you're sort of hedging your bets. If it's someone if it's an unknown quantity as opposed to someone you're doing business with for a long time, yeah. you hedge your bets up front. You have things set up in such a way that if things go sour, you're able to get out with minimal impact. But so yeah, staying and fighting, unless you have unlimited legal resources, and even then, the time to spend on fighting, it doesn't seem like it's usually worth it.
Well, like the guy who doesn't want to pay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, I'm going to not pay you for this because you did this wrong, and you were late with this, and this isn't going to happen, and I'm just totally unhappy with that. You know, if it's a lot of money, you might win in court, but at what cost? You know, how much effort do you have to do to make that right? In the case of some things, it's better to just go, you know what, chalk that up to experience and you know,
that's move on.
It. Done. Mm-hmm. Move on.
Yeah. Well, and you know, a lot of times that's the best course.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, when I was scared of collecting from that one guy, finally I just, you know, I hate that guy. I'm just scared of his dog, and I don't like his, I'm just like, it's creeped out, and I stopped delivering the paper. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was fine. The relationship was over.
Yep.
And I don't remember if I got a call from somebody saying, hey, what's up with the paper? I'm like, no, I think it was just mutually over.
We're done with it.
We're done with that. All right. Okay. Well, let's say that you have this desire to be this entrepreneur, but now you've been scared off by this show. There's a whole bunch of stuff that you can still do, that you can be involved in a business and grow it and make yourself an integral part of that. One of the ways to do that, if you're in the support business anyway, is to become an Apple genius.
Mm-hmm.
You will learn so much from this experience, I can't tell you. Dealing with customers, dealing with weird Mac problems, finding the solutions for that stuff. And you know what the best part about that is?
Hmm.
You actually have the parts to fix stuff. Instead of like scrounging on eBay or you know the back room of weird stuff or whatever for the mm-hmm. old stuff,
mm-hmm.
you can actually get the real deal.
Yep.
So that would be worth it right there, you know, so that you can actually find the solution to the problem. You can also be a creative genius. Some mm-hmm. of the stores have the new creative geniuses where basically you can be art director on everybody's birthday cards mm-hmm. all day long.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That actually sounds fun.
Mm-hmm.
I would put a giraffe on everybody's birthday card.
You will get the giraffe.
Different color giraffe, maybe. Different place on the card, but it's a giraffe.
Everybody gets a giraffe.
That's right.
Or a dinosaur. get a job at a company doing whatever. You know, being a designer for an art firm, mm-hmm. For an advertising firm, or go be part of a web company and learn what those things are doing and how that's going to do that. Or get a job at a retail store. You get to learn about stocking and
yeah, all that fun stuff.
And that's not about stocking. That's about putting stuff on the shelf.
Client
not
relations.
Stocking with an OOL, stocking with an AK.
No, I think they let you go for that kind of stocking from the store. Yeah,
right. I had fun doing retail when I did it.
You know, I've done retail a couple times, and it is always an interesting experience. I mean, I had fun too, because I like helping people learn technology, figure it out, and make sure they get the right product. But at the same time, you know, it's retail.
It's retail. It's, you know, and if you think, oh, it's going to be an easy job, it's 10, and then they close at 5. It's 10 to 5. It's going to be no big deal. Right. You got to get there at 8 o'clock to get the store ready for 10 o'clock. And then after 5, when it closes, or what store closes at 5? But anyway, when it closes, then you got 2 hours of resetting
the store. You're hosing the thing down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the idea of being a bartender always sounds glamorous. Oh, I'm a bartender. I'm going to meet all the hot chicks. I'm going to make everybody drinks. And it's like, oh, this is the worst job in the whole world. You know, because it's not all that. You know, the rock star part is only 10%.
Yes.
And then the rest of it's like, you know, all these other
now,
jobs.
Now, if that 10% is enough for you, then by all means.
Yeah, knock yourself out. Somebody yes. needs to tell me the origin of that. I can find out all this other stuff on the internet. Like all these different origins of things, but I can't find the origin of knock yourself out.
Oh, knock.
Knock yourself out.
Boxing?
Listeners, please send in to John Foster.
I thought, you know, just send it, post it on the forum. but info@MacBreakTech is the email. If you know what knock yourself out, where it started, you know, like the origin, like the OED. The Oxford English Dictionary, how words, you know, here's where this word first got used. You know, we thought that the word dope, the Homer Simpson, was originated in The Simpsons. It turned out it was like a 1948 comic strip, you know, that somebody had used as the exclamation.
Interesting.
Yeah. Did not know that until I was reading the OED original.
I heard one of those just the other day. I read one of them. It was something. It was the origins of bug. Everyone thinks it's the early mainframes, actual moth in the in the vacuum tube thing. Turns out that the word bug was used for I'll have to look up the reference now. Mechanical failures of all sorts back into the late 1800s. Even. Okay. Yeah. Turns out that even by then it was
there were bugs in the
outside
system.
Of the computer industry. Pre-computer.
There's been bugs in everything for a long time. There's bugs in this show. I'm going to say this about certifications, okay? For some things, you got to have them. But here's the thing.
Like
if you're
what?
Really, really talented, you don't need those certifications.
What certifications
okay,
do you
so
need?
Here's the thing. I was not able to do classes at Adobe after a certain point because I didn't have Adobe certification. Mm. And I'm like, guys, I worked on After Effects 2.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. Like, you can't get any more core than that. Right. Like, you know, testing stuff.
Yeah, right. That's the exception, right? You go get one if something that you're trying to do actually requires it as a right. as a point of entry. Yeah.
But anymore, it's so rare that you need a certification for most tech or creative things.
It's not true.
And it's definitely not an attractor of business.
I guess there's a thing is that if you are working in the medical companies, right?
That's different.
Then you need to have the certifications for yes. the Cisco products or the Microsoft products, right. you know, the things that you're taking
care of. There are
some
specific industries right. that do require certification.
And yes, size of company, too. You're going to find it's a large institution.
But see,
well,
the stuff we're talking about, like the designer down the street is not going to ask you for your MSCE certification card.
Do you have your A-plus certification?
No.
A-plus. The beep at the beginning means it's on. no offense, I don't know why I used that accent for that particular
funny,
joke.
Though.
Sorry, I'm so sure someone.
There's
would
a there's a bunch of certifications. Like for example, you can get an Adobe certification. You can get an Apple certification.
I have my Apple certification.
Training.apple.com/certification.
Mm-hmm.
The cool thing about this is that all the tests are out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
All the training materials is all there. So if in fact you were really into this, you could go and study up. Be ready to go, and then not actually take the test.
Mm-hmm.
You just know all that stuff.
Yep.
And but it's kind of cool that they have all that. And
I will say, I mean, I have several Apple certifications, but realistically, you know, it was more of a just at the time it seemed like the right thing to do, and realistically. It, you know, they've never helped me. I've never had anyone say, oh, well, you're certified. You must be.
You know how old my Apple certifications are? I have a certification so that I can fix Apple IIs that I got in 1981.
Nice.
I went to the Carrollton, Texas plant where they made apples.
And oh, wow.
Got trained
I
there.
Think I got... Now, see, that's the one certification where I can understand why you need it is the mechanic certification.
The mechanics, well, the thing was is that...
But that's a little different.
So the motherboards was basically hunt and peck, mm-hmm. you know, repairing stuff. And we actually then later on, I learned more about electronics so I could actually diagnose and repair an Apple II mm-hmm. motherboard just by turning it on. I would go, oh, that's the 74 LS138 that's over here by the RAM. Well, that's the thing that's not latching or not doing its job. But the disk drives, if I hadn't gone through the training at the time, you know, learning to repair disk drives would have taken a lot less longer. Yeah.
Well, the one thing I will say about if you're going to do hardware repairs, if you're going to make repairing Macintoshes your business, you know, mm-hmm. the hardware itself, be upfront with your customers if they have bought an Apple warranty.
Oh, yeah.
That by you opening their machine, if you don't have a certification, this is the one time when a certification does count. If you don't have your certification to work on that hardware, you need to let them know that by you opening their machine, you're voiding their warranty
yeah.
and throwing their Apple Care out the window, basically.
Well, the thing is that if that's the case, take that, pack that machine up, take it to the Apple store for them.
Exactly.
And then, you know, come back and go, okay, it's fixed, and here's my fee.
Yes.
Or where's my fee? Otherwise, you're not helping them
yeah.
out.
Exactly. Don't go and, especially if you don't really know how to fix it in the first place.
Yeah.
Or you think you know how to fix it, you know how to fix that hardware.
Got to really know. Otherwise, you're going to clean up the toner off the desk.
Yes. Or that laptop you just disassembled and broke that pin on. Well, yeah, it's going to cost.
Yeah, what if it doesn't? If it doesn't move on its own, there's another screw.
Get a pry bar.
Get a bigger hammer. Yeah.
There's so many other things we can go over.
Yeah. Well, basically, I'm going to leave this with the certifications and say, if you are a customer and you're going to get trained by somebody who went through this, who is certified, and somebody who's not.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to say, in most cases, I'm going to take the certified guy before I take the not certified guy.
Right.
Unless I meet the two guys and go, you're certified for a reason, and I'm taking that guy over there.
Yep.
Did we cover it all? Pre and post sales, getting into consulting, what are you solving?
It's a huge topic.
It is a huge topic. Training yourself, certifications, why bother? Every major company has a program, problems you might encounter. What does that mean? Support beyond basic tech support. That sounds like a job. Right. This was interesting. The businesses that you could do based on that. Like I wrote down databases, printers, training, pre-sale support, yeah. networking.
We talked about the beginning.
Yeah, we talked about that at the beginning. Making it legal as a business. Try it on first and then make it legal.
Yeah.
Don't rush out and make that happen.
And that is probably one of the best pieces of advice is, you know, we all love playing with our computers and think, oh, yeah, I'll go help that person. I'll make a name.
I'm going to make a pile.
You know?
That was, try it you know, first. This was the biggest problem. I got, you know, when I did my support company,
mm-hmm.
At some point I got overwhelmed. I had too many clients and I had too many demands and my phone was ringing all the time.
You need to bring on another person?
I had to bring on, and I'm like, where am I going to find that guy? Mm-hmm. You know, do I go poach somebody off the Genius Bar? You know, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, okay, well, then I'm going to have employees and that problem. Like, I don't want
Never
that.
Mind that the people that you've built the reputation on want you.
Yeah.
They don't want, as I think Merlin said one time, they don't want a guy with a haircut. You know, they want you. They want the guy that they know and that they trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, I don't want to, and I'm like, seriously, there was one day I'm like, I don't want to play tech support anymore.
I'm done.
Done with this game. Speaking of done with this game.
Yes. I think we've tortured them long enough.
We tortured them long enough. I think we got it all covered. Two things that you want to know about. We're having a contest. We're giving away a Mac. It's so cool. It's actually not really a Mac. It's like a Mac.
What is it, John?
It's a power computing thing over there. It's in a beige box.
Oh.
It's a 200. It's 180 megahertz, or maybe it's 200. It's 180 megahertz 604E. on the riser card, and it has the PCI slots on the thing. Anyway, I took it completely apart. I cleaned all the dust out of it. Mm-hmm. It's as magnificent as it possibly can be from a 1997 point of view.
Wow. This is the vintage computer contest.
Yeah, this it's better than that. Here's the thing. It comes in the original box. Yes. With the original keyboard and the original mouse. All the original installation discs, including a Global Village, possibly 288 modem, but it's more likely a 14.4 modem.
Is it the gold or silver?
It says platinum on it.
Oh, it's the platinum one. Oh.
I don't remember what that is. That could be a 56K modem.
It's better than gold.
Anyway, it's kind of a cool machine because it has an ADB port on it for keyboard, keyboard and mouse, but it also has... It also has the Windows
PS2?
PS2 ports. And there's two of them, one for a mouse and one for a keyboard. So that's kind of rad. That means that they could use, you know, cost reduced
the keyboard. This is an interesting hybrid system.
Yeah, and it boots. That's kind of cool. But this is the funny thing. I didn't have any monitors that were compatible with it. We've switched over to this 1680 by 1020 or a 1050 monitor for all the people in the office. And there's some that are even bigger than that. But anyway, that wouldn't post. It wouldn't talk to the display.
Ouch.
It was funny. So, anyway, we're giving that away. Details to follow, so stay with us there. Anyway, I think that's it.
It's a fun little piece of technology history.
There might be others.
I was going to say, there might be others.
There might be others, but anyway, this came to me because the guy goes, hey, I have a power computing machine in an original box. It's been used, but I got the original box. I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Keyboard seen better times though.
Well,
hey Ben Durbin, thanks for being here.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I know that you're kind of having a sugar crash, right?
No problem. It's the recording marathons.
The recording marathons. Well, it's the pre-waiting.
The pre-waiting.
The pre-waiting. Anything you want to plug? Besides food in your mouth.
Yeah, right. I'm plugging all local restaurants within a mile.
Sounds good.
Kenji Kato, where can they find you?
Out and about in the country, since I'm doing a lot of travel.
Nice.
So I'm mainly in the New York area lately. So if you happen to be listening to this in the 2008 time frame of the spring, then you might see me in the New York area.
Nice. So you're going to hang out at the Apple stores and maybe give a talk or something?
Actually, I've gone to the Apple store a couple times. So, you might happen to see me at one of the Apple stores in New York.
Right on.
Nice. So.
I'm John Foster, and we'll see you on the other side. What do you mean it didn't record?